Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on likelihoods when we come back. Hey, when you're making $50,000 a year, then you pay about $7,650 a year in Social Security taxes. Well, you're paying 17% income tax on top of that $50,000. You know, that's another $8,500 on top of the first $7,650. And when you do that, you've just paid $1,300 extra by paying your tax on a tax. And that makes the real effective Social Security tax rate 17.8%. It's not 15.3% that's being advertised. Isn't that just special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Help take a bite out of crime. Why don't you call and ask for our free general law CD package at the same time? It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free and cost anything. Tax and status is available on compact disc. That's our home school. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about likelihoods from the Money Changer, Franklin Sanders' newsletter. And he pointed out that there is a thing called, that he calls discontinuity, or discontinuing what's been happening in the past. Something is going to change here. And he talked about likelihoods. If you'll remember, there's a couple of guys blew into his office one day, and they started talking about, you know, what do you think is going to happen with the economy? What do you think is going to happen with the balance of payments trade deficit? What do you think is going to happen to the value of the dollar? What do you think is going to happen with hyperinflation? What do you think is going to happen with the economy? And how do you prepare for these events? Well, you know, all of us are in the same boat. It isn't just those two guys talking to Franklin Sanders. It's people calling me on the telephone. It's my neighbors. It's your neighbors. It's your coworkers. You know, everybody is nervous right now. Everybody is sitting on the sidelines watching and waiting, you know, what's going to happen. And in the meantime, we're not spending money. So, you know, if we took a look at the likelihoods, what is likely to occur from our behavior? What's likely to occur from the government's actions? What's likely to occur from the bank's policy? Well, history is a good guide to what's going to happen in the future because history repeats itself. But why does history repeat itself? Well, when you do the same thing twice, you can expect to get the same results twice. And if you get the same results over and over and over again, it's like a scientific experiment. You know, they like to take something into the laboratory and they mix some chemicals together and it blows up. And somebody says, sounds like nitroglycerin. So they mix it up and it blows up again. They mix it up a third time, blows up again. You know, if you mix the same chemicals together time after time, and then each time that you mix these chemicals up, they blew up, pretty soon you'd be able to predict. You'd be able to be a prophet. You could mix these chemicals up and say, now here's the last chemical. When I pour this one in here, there's going to be an explosion. And you pour the last chemical in, and sure enough, it blows up, and you say, see, I'm a prophet. Well, now, could we do the same thing with our economy? Could we look back in history and then say, well, when we did this in the past, here was the results that we got from it. Kind of like inflation, you know. Are we going to have more inflation, or are we going to have deflation? That's what people are asking right now. And every night on the news, there's this, oh, my God, we're headed for deflation. We've got to stop this deflation. And I pointed out to you last time, there hasn't been a nickel's worth of deflation in anything yet. That's not to say deflation isn't coming, but it hasn't occurred yet. There have been some price reductions from their all-time highs, but that doesn't constitute deflation. And I pointed out copper. When we started this little episode, from the last recession in 2000, copper was 80 cents a pound, and it went up to 350 a pound, and then it fell from 350 back to a dollar and a half or $1.60. So when we take a look at copper, the price of copper is inflated by double. It is twice as expensive as it was from the last recession to this recession. That's not deflation, that's inflation. Now, we have depression, and we have had depression in this country since 1973. That was the last year that we had a rise in our actual living standards or actual wages. Now, deflation is a lowering of prices, and people are just terrified of deflation. I don't know why. Let me ask you this. When the price of gasoline was $4 a gallon and the price decreased to $2 a gallon, was that good for you or was that bad for you? And are you just staying up nights and can't sleep, and you're just worried sick that the price of gasoline isn't going to go back to $4 a gallon, and that you're writing your senator and representative and beseeching him and encouraging him to do everything possible to make the price of gasoline go to $4 a gallon? And while you're at it, if the price of gas at $4 a gallon is good, wouldn't $8 a gallon be even better? So why don't you suggest to Dianne Feinstein and Nancy Pelosi that they develop policies to raise the price of gasoline to $8 a gallon if that's good for you? No, I didn't do that. I thought the price of gasoline dropping by half was a good thing. But that didn't create any deflation at all, because the price of gas was $1 a gallon in 2000, and it went from $1 a gallon to $4 and then dropped to $2. The price of gasoline is twice as expensive as it was the last time around. So we've had more inflation, not deflation. When the price of gasoline goes down to 15 cents a gallon, by golly, now that's deflation. When it goes down to something below what its normal price should be, about $1 a gallon, why, then we've got deflation, which then would be translated into depression. Depression is where our living standards go down. The worst depression we ever had in this country, from the Revolution to today, the worst period of depression, living standard loss, was from 1941 to 1946. That's when we had rationing. We actually had no cars to buy, 3 gallons of gasoline a week, and a limitation on meat. I think it was a pound a week, something like that. So that was depression. The Great Depression of the 1930s was a deflation, but living standards actually went up. Yes, sir? Well, it didn't go up for that 25% that were unemployed, but for the other 75% that were employed, it went up. And it was reflected in the consumption of butter and the consumption of other things. We were actually eating more and living better because the prices had gone down. See, today you can buy more gasoline at $2 a gallon than you could at $4. And buy at least twice as much, which means that you can consume twice as much. Now, when we look at likelihoods, and that's what Franklin Sanders did here in his article called Likelihoods, he's pointing out a few of the more obvious things, like, are we going to have deflation? He's, nope, no deflation, forget that. Are we going to have inflation? Yep, we're going to have more inflation. How do we know that? Well, because inflation is when you print more money, and it's not when prices go up. When prices go up, that's the results of inflation. That's not the inflation. When prices go down, that's not deflation. Deflation, excuse me, it's not depression. I'm going to get my metaphors mixed up. It's not depression. Deflation is when prices go down, but depression is when your living standards go down. And that's what we're all suffering from right now. And depression occurs when you're having inflation. Think about that for a minute. From 1973 till today, your living standard, your standard of living, has decreased by 18%. That's why your wife is out working in the marketplace so that she can bring in that second income. That's why you're paying those people down there at the daycare center to take care of your kids, so that both of you can work, so you can pay your bills. And that's because you're making more and more money, which is buying less and less. And that's why I pointed out to you last time. I said, you know, in 1945, we had a higher standard of living with ice cream priced at 10 cents for an ice cream cone. And today, the ice cream is priced at $2.35. We're making 10 times more money, but we can only buy half as much ice cream. Now, think about that. You make 10 times more money, and when you go out into the marketplace, you can only buy half as much in the way of goods. That's not an increase in your living standards. That's a decrease. That's depression. That's what's happening. Your living standards are being depressed. So Franklin Sanders is asking the question, well, what are the likelihoods of these events? What should we be preparing for? What is it that has happened in the past that we can hang our hats on and know that these government policies are going to produce results? And listen to this. Government solution. Is the government going to solve this problem? 62% of Americans believe, at least that's what they're telling the pollsters, that Barack Obama and the government is going to solve this current economic crisis. Well, God love them. Talk about optimism. Now, the answer to that is no, they're not. And the reason that they're not is because they're following the same failed policies of the 1930s. We're going to get the same results that we got in the 1930s. And that wasn't a fast, direct recession. It was a long, drawn-out depression. So are we going to have a short or maybe even a long recession? Or are we going to have a short depression? Or are we going to have a long, drawn-out depression? And the answer is we're going to have a long, drawn-out depression, because the same policies that produced the last long, drawn-out depression are being followed this time around. You're mixing the same chemicals together, and I predict you'll get the same results you got the last time. Now, if that's what you want, then you need to keep doing exactly what you're doing, because that's a proven winner. If you didn't like the results from the last time, then you need to do something different. Is there a government solution? The answer is no. The government is not going to solve the problem. They're going to exacerbate it. Is it because they're ignorant and they don't know what they're doing? Well, that's part of it. I think they are ignorant, don't know what they're doing, but they're doing this with premeditated forethought. The objective here is to collapse the world's economy to make everybody desperate. And then when you're desperate, you will follow the guidelines that are going to be set out to solve your problem. So for you people out there that have lost your jobs and you're unemployed, see, that's exactly where they wanted you. Because now when they say line up and take a chip in your right hand and in your forehead, you'll do it to save your house, to save your car, to save your job. You may not like it. You may not want to do it. But you'll do it because there isn't any other solution for you. You haven't prepared for any other eventuality. And so when events transpire, you'll just have to do it. So the government and its meddling, they're not doing this accidentally. At least that's my view. And I'm going to add a little bit of my view here. Are we going to see more government meddling in the economy? Yes, no doubt about it. How do I know that? Because the president is an activist, and Franklin D. Roosevelt was an activist. This president is following Franklin D. Roosevelt. So therefore, it's pretty simple to put two and two together and say, this guy is following the Roosevelt plan. Roosevelt plan was an activist plan. Therefore, this president is going to be activist in the economy. In fact, he keeps telling you every day, we've got to take action, and only government can solve your problem for you. Hell, boys and girls, it was government that caused the problem. That's where the problem is. The government caused the problem. Monetary policy. Now, the solution, they tell us, is more of the same, that if excessive debt and if fiat paper currency has caused your problem, then the solution is more debt and more fiat paper. Okay, well, we tested that the last time, and it didn't work the last time, and so my prediction is it isn't going to work this time. And that's what Franklin Sanders is telling us also. It's always good to know that there's another guy out here that's as far out to lunch as I am or as far out to lunch as you are, because it'll make you feel better. See, most of us are out here, those of us that are on the far right here in economic policy. See, we're advocating a different program here. And Franklin Sanders is an advocate of hard money, that what we need is gold and silver coin and no paper, that what we need is less debt, not more. What we need is limited government, not big, massive, all-pervasive government. What we need is the Ten Commandment model, not the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model, and so on. And that's not even on the table. You know, our government policymakers, they're not even talking about gold and silver coin. That's not in the conversation. More spending, more stimulus. The conversation is, well, that's too much. The Republicans say, well, that's too much stimulus. And the Democrats say, no, it's not enough. And the Democrats say, well, we need to put more money out there. And Republicans say, no, I need to put less money out there. And the conversation is never about gold and silver. It's never about Article 1, Section 10. It's always about more fiat or less fiat, more debt, higher interest rates, lower interest rates. How about no interest rates at all? How about following the biblical Ten Commandment principle of no interest at all, zero, zilch? And for most of you, when I say we should go to a policy of no interest at all, no interest rates, you're sitting there saying, well, that's impossible because business can't function. And you're right. I'm not denying that. If you want to follow income tax, central banking, fiat paper with an economy with stocks and bonds, you're right. That won't work. I don't deny it. So I would like to suggest that we get off this economy mode and go back to property. I'd like to suggest that we get off this income mode and go back to increase, and that we get off the income tax mode and go back to tithing. I know it's a wild new concept, but when we practiced that in this country, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. You know, we started off as 13 backward colonies, remember that? In an undeveloped world. This was the United States of America was a third world undeveloped nation. And in about 100 years, it became the world's dominant political, economic, and military power with gold and silver coin, Article 1, Section 10, with small, limited government. Now somebody woke up one day and said, what we need is big government. We need big government solutions. We need paper money. We need a central bank. We need an income tax. Okay. So we did all of the above, and we got a result that came from that. And this result is where we're at today. So my thinking here follows right along with Franklin Sanders. Now, by the way, Sanders' newsletter is called The Money Changer. And I don't know what the price is. I don't pay the bills here, so I don't know what the price is. But if you'd call him at 888-218-9226, got that down? It's 888-218-9226, and he'd tell you, I'm sure. He's got an article in here this month, too, called Surviving Hyperinflation, and asked for the January 2009 issue. This is the first issue for January 2009 issue. All right, so I've got a list of things over here that I think that we can expect based upon the policies that are being unraveled now at the highest levels here in the United States. Let's take a look at deflation. Should we expect deflation? No. How about inflation? Should we be expecting more inflation? Yes. Government solution. Are we going to have a government solution to this credit crisis? No. No government solution at all. Are we going to have more government meddling in the economy? Yes, absolutely. More and more of it. Are we going to have a short recession? No, no. It's going to be a very long, long economic crisis. Are we going to have a long depression then? Yes, we're going to have a very long depression, longer than the last depression. Well, you know, if I'm going to make a prediction here, let me make a prediction based upon the facts. In the last depression, which started in 1929, October of 1929, it took 3.5 years to reach the bottom. We've been in this contraction for 18 months, and in 18 months, we don't know where the bottom's at. Haven't got a clue. In 1929, we reached bottom, leveled off, and we came back up in 1930. There was a gain. There was a rebounding of 64% before it leveled off, plateaued, and then went into the cellar. The total overall loss in stock market value in 1929 to 33 was 89%. Well, so far we haven't lost 89%, but my prediction would be that we're going to lose 89% or something in that neighborhood, you know. And I would say the neighborhood would be 70%, 80%, 90%. You know, that'd be in the neighborhood. Will it lose 100%? No, I don't believe that for a minute. If you look around the world in all of the history of stock markets and investing, I've never seen one yet that lost 100% of its value, but we have seen 89% losses. And so at this moment in time, the stock market is right around 8,000, so it's down by about 40% so far, round number. Is it going to go lower? No doubt. Why? All the fundamentals are in place. All the things that we did the last time, all the things that we're doing this time, all tell us that that's exactly what's going to happen. And is there going to be a rebounding of the stock market? Yes, yes. Could the stock market rebound to 10,000? It could. Why do I say that? Well, because that's what happened in 1930 and 31. Then will it go into the pit? Yep. How do I know that? That's what happened the last time. In fact, when we look at these depressions and these economic collapses of the past, they have a pattern that goes along with them. There's a result that comes from the printing of paper money, and then there's a result that comes from it, and then there's a reaction, and then that reaction has a result. And then we look at the reactions to the reactions and the results of the results, and we put that together, and it tells us a pretty comprehensive story. Historically, we've been through this before. This is not something brand new. This is not developed by the Obama, Clinton, Bush administration. So we've been doing this under the Washington administration and the Ulysses S. Grant administration and the Grover Cleveland administration, Teddy Roosevelt, Warren G. Harding, Herbert Hoover. You know, come on. We've been through this many, many times. And do we always get the same results? No. No, the results many times are different. In fact, let me tell you about a good result. We had a collapse of our currency in 1783. The Continental Congress, in order to fund the Revolutionary War, just printed money. They just did then what our government's doing now. They just went out and started printing money and spending it. Drove all the goods off the shelves. There was depression, a collapse of the economy. And from 1783 through about 1787, there was just terrible disruption. People were upset. There was poverty. Now, they met in Philadelphia to hammer out a constitution. And in that constitution, they put in 17 words, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin, a tender in payment of debt. So they went from paper money, fiat paper currency, and poverty, and stand in line to share the shortage, to gold and silver. And in 36 months, it was all over, and the economy was rebounding. And the economy never looked back from that point forward. But then they decided what they needed was a central bank. And so they created the United States National Bank in 1796. That's George Washington and Company. Chartered it for 20 years, and then they rechartered it for another 20 years. Until 1836, it was Andrew Jackson that said, I'm not going to recharter this bank. And put some more sanity back and paid off the national debt. It's the only time we ever did that. And the bankers were really upset about that. And they worked hard to reestablish their banking monopoly. See, banking is very profitable. Big business loves it. Government loves it. Politicians love it. Bankers love it. Because it's a way that we loot millions of people just a little bit at a time. Nobody even knows they're being robbed. They don't come out and stick a gun in your head and take all your money. They just come out here and they just take a dollar now and a dollar then. They just nickel and dime you to death. You never know where in the hell the money's going. Now, take this TARP program. Say they just put out $700 billion. You don't know where that money went. It just disappeared. Isn't that special? Yeah, it just took off. Senator Dornan the other day was talking about that. And it's a secret. You know that Bush stimulus package, you know, that bailout thing he signed in October? Okay, well, they gave out $350 billion of it. There isn't a dime of the $350 billion that's traceable. They don't know if it went to Bank of America, if it went to Joe Sixpack or Sally Housewife or where in the hell it went. It's gone. It just disappeared. State secret. Can't find out. This guy's a United States senator. He said he couldn't find out. What the hell do you think your chances are? So I thought I'd point that out. Banking is a criminal enterprise which is designed for the express purpose of looting the taxpayers. And Andrew Jackson knew that, so he called a halt to it. George Bush knew that, but he aided and abetted them in the robbery. And the new president's doing the same thing. It's just more of the same. Are we going to have a long depression? Absolutely. No doubt about it. Are we going to have a strong dollar? No. No. Are we going to have a weak dollar? Yes. Yes. Are we going to have hyperinflation? You can bet on it. No doubt about it. Absolutely in the cards. Every policy that's being followed guarantees hyperinflation. Hyperinflation, they tell us, is where prices go up 10% a month. We're not there yet. Are we headed there? You bet. You see, the inflation has already taken place. And that's what Sanders pointed out. He said inflation was. It already happened. Remember, inflation isn't raising prices. It's an increase in the money supply. And the Fed and the government have created $8.5 trillion in bailouts and added $1 trillion to the Fed's balance sheet. Now, every cent of that may not be inflationary, but what's the difference? With Obama sidling up to spend another $1 trillion and two wars being waged, what's the difference? The inflation has already been accomplished. And on this scale of magnitude, greater or less makes no more difference to us than what the megaton output of Little Boy was to the people of Hiroshima when it landed on them in 1945. And I think that's exactly correct. And so you're going to have hyperinflation? Guaranteed. Can't miss. How about economic recovery? Are we going to have a recovery? No. No way in hell are you going to have an economic recovery. Why? Because everything you're doing equals no recovery. None. Zero. If you think Roosevelt engineered recovery from 33 to 37, forget it. In 37, unemployment was higher than it was in 1930. 33. No, unemployment is bad now and getting worse, and the policies that we're following is going to create more unemployment. Is that an accident? No way in hell. Now, the policymakers all know that, and the objective is to create unemployment. But can the president come out and say, look, I'm working for Skull and Bones and the New World Order, and I'm here to put all of you people out of work so that we can give you the mark of the beast and rule over you with a rod of iron. Now, would you vote for that? So I don't care who it is that's running for president or running for public office. He's got to come out and say, I'm for the little guy. I'm here to help. I'm from the government, and we're going to get this economy going again, and what we need is a stimulus package. Now, what you need is gold and silver, coin just weights and balances, and an abolishing of the central banking system. That's what you need. Now, is that what you're going to get? No way in hell. And the powers that be know that. But you see, the powers that be make their money off of inflation, make their money off of banking and insurance, they make their money off of big business, they make their money off of government. And it's at your expense, and so you're going to have more of the same. All right, now, if I can find my papers here, I've got to give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, all of which can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Why don't you be sure to order one of those by calling and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate and endorse and recommend the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, where you can call us 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the Money Changer for January 2009. Money Changer is put out by a fellow named Franklin Sanders. He's a gold broker, and he's a conservative economist who writes an underground newsletter. We call this underground, black market. See what you're thinking, black market? It's actually the free marketplace. It's where the marketplace and goods actually clear. It tells you what the real value of things are. in gold and silver coin, where real value and real money meet, is in the free marketplace. And this isn't the only guy that's a member of it, but he's one of many. Just to show you how big the free marketplace is here in the United States, it represents about 25% of all the goods and services produced and sold in the country. It represents all of those non-taxable transactions that are done in secret, under the table, under the counter, in backyards, in kitchens, in warehouses, all over America, that are not taxed, not reported, that nobody knows anything about, that government hates and business hates. And that's because it works. It works. And it works for the benefit of the people who are participating in it, not for the people that want to horn in. It doesn't help the mafia. It doesn't help the Cosa Nostra or the Republicans or the Democrats or the Communists or Socialists or anybody else. Just the people who are buying, selling, and trading those goods. Represents 25%, or about $2 to $3 trillion a year is being bought, sold, and traded under the table that nobody knows anything about. How do you like that? And to show you how effective this free market is, I mean, if you're a communist or a socialist and you're expecting, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the stock market and the IRS and the State Franchise Tax Board and all these government agencies and so on to regulate and control business, and it won't work without it. Listen to this. With all of the government controls and with all of the taxes and tax policy and millions of words of laws and rules and regulations and all the rest of it, take a look at where your economy is. It is in absolute disarray and total chaos. All right? Now, that's where you're at. Now, take a look at the marijuana market, marijuana, and the illegal activity. Well, it's illegal because government says it's illegal. It's not illegal because God said it was illegal. God, you see, the creator of the universe, this real weird off-the-wall God that I keep telling you about every once in a while, he said back in Genesis 1, 28, 29, and 30, he says, I've given you every green herb on planet Earth. So he gave us all these green herbs. Last time I checked, marijuana was still green. So this is a creation that God created, didn't evolve. No, it was created. He said, I created this, I made this, and I'm giving it to you. It's your government that said God lied to you, he didn't create it, it evolved, and we're taking it away from you because it's bad for you. Okay. So on the one hand, you've got the God of government says this marijuana is bad for you, and you've got the God of creation says, no, it's good for you. Well, used properly. See, I'm not sure that the people that are using it and smoking it are using it properly, but that's another question, another topic for another day. Now, take a look at the wheat, corn, soybean, and cotton market here in the United States. They're big. They produce around $25 to $30 billion a year, each one of those markets. There's a big wheat market, big corn market, you know, big soybean market, big cotton market, lots of farmers. And they've got price controls, and they've got marketing quotas, and they've got soil set-aside programs, and they've got price supports, and all of these things to make these markets work and to make these farmers prosperous and to make this agricultural enterprise, you know, lucrative and make profits and everybody benefits. That's what government's doing, just working their hearts out. Meanwhile, back on the farm, the marijuana market is $37 billion a year. It's bigger than the four biggest enterprises in the country. I like that. And it's done totally clandestinely. It has to be done secretly because it's illegal. The government has outlawed it. And the government doesn't give them any price supports, doesn't give them any subsidies, doesn't give them any marketing quotas, and if they catch them, they'll lock them up in prison, and it's bigger. And there's no shortages out there. You don't see marijuana farmers marching on Washington, crying their eyeballs out, saying, oh my God, we don't know where we're going to sell our crop, and we need price supports. I don't need any price supports. They don't need marketing quotas like Jimmy Carter, you know, getting a marketing quota for peanuts. And there's no shortages, and there's no economic chaos out here in the marijuana market. It's because it's operating in the free marketplace. That's why. And that's the power of the marketplace. That's the power of people's freedom to choose and the prices that they're willing to pay. That's all. Nothing more, nothing less. And I'm not here advocating that you go smoke dope or that you get out here in the illegal drug market. I'm just telling you that there's the marketplace. That's what people are willing to pay. That's where it clears the market, and there's no shortages, and it's not costing you a dime. The marijuana growers aren't taking any of your tax money. There's no subsidies going to them like the wheat, corn, soybean, and cotton farmers. And there's no chaos in the marketplace. How do you like that? Now, are we going to have shortages, wage and price controls, and rationing? Absolutely. No doubt about it. You are going to see, coming out of this economic crisis, shortages of everything. Wage and price controls and rationing. Are we going to see more unemployment? Absolutely. More unemployment. Will it hit 25%? Without a doubt. In fact, in Argentina, it hit 62% at the peak of their collapse. 62%. Will we see 62%? I believe we'll see 60% unemployment in the United States. Absolutely. You people are going to be so prostrate, prostrate before your masters that when they suggest to you that you get a chip in your right hand and go to the cashless society, you'll line up. You will fight for positions in line to get your mark. How's that for a prophecy? Will there be a collapse of the dollar? No doubt. How about a new monetary system? You bet. Food shortages, hunger, and famine, without a doubt. Let me tell you, without a doubt. How do I know that? It's a promise. Got it from God Almighty himself. He said, here's what I'm going to do to you. So God's going to add a little bit to the mix. In fact, I think he's already added quite a bit to the mix already. And I don't think we've gotten the message yet. It's kind of like Hurricane Katrina. I don't think anybody ever got the message from Hurricane Katrina. Shape up. So have we changed anything? Not to my knowledge. Are we going to change anything? I don't believe it. Are there going to be more Hurricane Katrinas? Without a doubt. Are they going to get worse? You can bet on it. Take it to the bank. Just like this monetary crisis. Now, is there going to be civil unrest and disorder? Well, there always has been in the past. What makes you think that everything is going to come out roasty toasty this time? So, you know, are you looking for civil unrest? You bet. Lots of it. More than we've ever seen before, because morality in America is at an all-time low. And we've been taught and trained to be immoral, and we don't practice the Ten Commandments. How about martial law? You think we'll see martial law? Without a doubt. It's where they're headed. It's where they take power. Yep, more law and order, as they call it. Normally they'll have martial law. How about a new constitutional convention? Yeah, I think we're headed to a new constitution with a new constitutional convention. They're just two states short of the two-thirds that they need to call a constitutional convention. Is there a new constitution in the wings? Sure, they've already had it for many, many years. Anything like our old constitution? Not even close. Not even close. Are we going to have communism embedded in our constitution? Without a doubt. Not that it's going to change anything for the average Joe Sixpack. He's been practicing communism, practicing communism now all of his life. You know, let me give you an illustration, because sometimes people, they write me letters, and then sometimes the letters aren't nice. And they invite me to leave America and go to Russia or China and practice communism, because they say, you're the communist, Gordon. You're nothing but a damn communist. Well, excuse me. Hang on a second. The 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto call for a heavy progressive income tax. That's plank number two. Now, I don't practice the income tax. I quit. I used to pay it. I used to practice it. I used to fill out my 1040 forms, but I stopped doing that because it's a crime. And then how about the central bank with their paper money called the Federal Reserve? That's the fifth plank. Hey, that's another crime. And I stopped doing that. I closed my bank account, sent my credit cards back, and I deal in gold and silver. Now, and I don't use Federal Reserve notes, checks, credit cards, and so on. And then the eighth plank calls for Social Security. And I used to have a Social Security number, and I sent it back, and I said, take me off the rolls. And I rescinded my agreement, and I said, no, I'm going to quit doing it. That's a crime. And then public school. I'm a victim of public school. I was institutionalized for 12 years. Hell, I'm familiar with public school here, boys and girls. I know how it works. Sent all my kids to public school. Shows you how dumb I was. Now, there's four of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And how do you people out there all practicing those four? Now, don't write me a letter and get self-righteous and indignant now and tell me about how I'm a dirty, rotten, low-down communist and how you're a righteous Rosie, you know. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, if you want to keep doing that, I'm not here to tell you not to. I'm just here to tell you that that's what's causing the problem. And this communism now has caused us no end of problem, and it's going to continue to cause us problems. So when I say we're going to have martial law, new constitution, civil unrest, food shortages, more unemployment, a collapse of the dollar, hell, that's the program that we're following. I don't see how you can miss. And so I'm sitting here saying, I'm not really sure that I want to follow in your footsteps here, Tom. I'm going to sit on the sidelines and watch all you good folks out there and our President Obama lead us into this new utopian era of a fun and frolic for all. Let me count me out. Let me sit over here on the sidelines and watch all you people have fun. Okay. Now, are we looking forward here to state and municipal bankruptcies? Without a doubt. California is right on the cusp of bankruptcy right now. Bond market collapse, no doubt. Bond market can't withstand the economic turmoil that's being unleashed upon it. Stock market collapse, you bet. No doubt about it. In fact, I'm going to step out here on a limb. I think that this is a pretty sound limb. The last time around, the stock market reached the bottom with a loss of 89%. Based upon all of the debt that I see, and based upon all of the fundamentals that's out here in the marketplace, you know, like the price-to-earnings ratio and the prices of stocks, we're nowhere near the bottom. And I think 89% is pretty close to the reality of it. Now, it may be that this time around it won't go down as far as it did the last time. 89%, now that's a fur piece. And maybe the stock market this time won't go down 90% like it did last time. It'll only go down 70%. But let's take a look at 70% of 14,000. 14,000 times 0.70 is a loss of 9,800 points. So the stock market, if it goes down 70%, will bottom out around 4,000, 4,200. And where's the stock market today? Well, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is out around 8,000. So it's gonna lose about 50% of its current value. So if today, you know, if you sent me a letter and you said, well, Gordon, the stock market's at 8,000, do you think I should sell? Well, I don't give advice. I'm not a stockbroker. Hell, I'm not here to tell you people how to live your lives. But if you ask me, well, do you think the stock market is going to go lower? Absolutely. How much lower? I think it's going to 4,000, without a doubt. Now, secretly in my heart of hearts, I think it's gonna plumb the depths out around 90%. Do I know that? No. I can't look into my crystal ball because I'm not a prophet, don't have a crystal ball. But looking back at history, that was what happened the last time. Now, that was the peak of a loss, of an economic collapse. Stock market lost 89% from 1929 to 33. Is it going to do that again? I can't predict that, but I'm pretty certain that it's going to hit 70%. So then, you know, if you were a betting man, what you would do is you'd sell everything that you've got in the way of stocks today, take your lumps, but you would save half because you're going to lose another half of what's there. How about the pension system? Do you think that you're going to retire on your pension from General Motors, buy a Winnebago, and live out your golden years traveling the highways and byways of America? Do you believe that? Pension system's going to collapse. All of them? Oh, no. There'll be two or three of them that survive. You can just about bet that government and their pension systems are going to survive. All private pensions are dead. Social Security's dead. Are you people out there on Social Security going to get your checks? You bet. Are your checks going to buy anything? No. But you're going to get paid every damn dime you were promised. That'd be my prediction. That's called hyperinflation. There was a guy in Germany who bought a life insurance policy in 1903. And it was 100,000 marks. Now, 1903, 100,000 marks was about $50,000, about half. And he paid all of his premiums faithfully until 1922, when he finished paying it off. He cashed it in, and then he traded it for a loaf of bread, because that's the price of a loaf of bread, 100,000 marks. How do you like that? And you Social Security pensioners out there that paid in all those years, that's what you're going to get. In the final analysis, you're going to get a loaf of bread. That'll be your payoff. But they're going to pay you the whole $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000 that they owe you. It's just that the money's going to buy a loaf of bread. More corporate bailouts, absolutely. This is a fascist regime, and you can just bet on more corporate bailouts at the expense of the taxpayers, who don't have any money anyway, because all of us are flat-ass broke, aren't we? But they're going to take what credit we've got left, and they're going to go out and they're going to spend it in our name. Are we going to see any debt relief for homeowners? None. Zero. Zilch. In fact, of the first $700 billion, $350 has been spent. Can you point to one dime that's gone to one homeowner? One dime out of $700 billion. If you can identify one dime, please rush, hurry, send an email and identify that homeowner that received that 10 cents, would you? That money never was intended for homeowners. That money is intended for banks, and the banks got it. Well, there you are. So there's not going to be any debt relief for homeowners. Now, will there be some like, are we going to have a token black in the operation here? Oh, yeah, you're going to have a token homeowner who's going to get debt relief. And then they'll bandy that around like a slot machine bell in Harrah's Casino. I mean, it'll be ding, 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 and everybody get excited about, hey, this guy just won over here on that slot machine. They're going to pay him $35. Here comes the girl now. She's got the money right there in her hand. She's going to pay the winner. Oh, look at that lucky winner over there. Now listen, here's the way this game is being played. If I came to you and I said, look, hey Bob, let's you and I buy an apartment house. I got a hell of a deal. We got a $1 million building over here. And the owner of the building is bankrupt. He can't make his payments and he's going to lose the building. And we can buy it from him for $500,000. And here's all we need to do is to put a little partnership together. It'll be you, Bob, and me, and Tony over here, you, me, and Tony. Now, Tony and me, we don't have any money. But what we would like to do is to borrow from you $5,000 each, and then you put up $5,000. That'll be our down payment. And then we want you to pledge your house, because your house is free and clear, and we don't own any homes. We're just renters to the bank, see? And then we can take over this building. Now, this building right now has payments of $5,000 a month, and it has a rent structure that's now paying $4,000 a month. It has a vacancy factor of 50%. We'd like to renovate the building, so we would like you to pledge your business and your business inventory for another $200,000 loan, which can be amortized at $3,000 a month. The rent structure won't support this, but we have high hopes that after we renovate the building, we'll be able to rent the other 50% of the apartments, even though our tenants are moving out at the rate of 20% a month, and we're renting new apartments at the rate of 10% a month. And then we're going to be $2,000 a month short in being able to service these two debts. And we want you to pony up the money from your business and from your savings and pay that $2,000 a month, and then we will all share equally in the profits of this wonderful investment. What do you think of that, boys and girls? Because that's what your government is out here doing in your name and your partners. Remember, taxpayers are partners with the government. And these are the business deals that are being made for you. Now, like I said, I'd like to sit on the sidelines and watch all of you taxpayers out there. I want to watch and see how much money you make. I want to watch your success. I don't want to participate with you. I want to get as far away from you folks as I can get. Now, this newsletter that we're reviewing here is called The Money Changer. And this is the kind of thing that Franklin Sanders is trying to get across to people, that the people of America have lost their minds. They're just absolutely insane. Well, these 62% of them. Because in polls, 62% of them tell the pollsters, we believe that Barack Obama and the government is going to be able to bail the economy out, that we're going to have a shorter recession, and that we're going back to business as usual. And if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell in Brooklyn. Yeah, I got this watch. Now, I'm sure that people believe it, and I'm sure that they're optimistic, and I'm sure that they're hopeful. But that's not where reality's at. And if you want to survive this, you know, you're going to have to get your feet on the ground. You're going to have to get your head out of the clouds. Telephone number here is 888-218-9226. Get that down. 888, toll free, 888-218-9226. You want the January 2009 Money Changer. I promote these newsletters, and I promote some of these articles and newsletters, and I do it in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time here, kids. We're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.